This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 24th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday evening is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, man. How you?
Oh, except for the pain in my backside, I'm doing all right. You ever strain a glute muscle?
I can't say I have.
Don't do it. It's a real pain in the butt.
Ooh, yes. Well, I'm dealing with a broken toe, so I kind of feel your pain.
Oh no!
But you know that's okay. I've been breaking toes every Olympic year since 2004.
Okay, so you're good at it.
So last, yeah, I am indeed. I figured
we got to get you a medal. Medal set of shoes.
Indeed. And so last year when it didn't happen, I figured, well, I guess the pandemic fixed that problem. Little did I know is that my broken, it's always the small toe and it changes left foot, right foot. And this is the left foot again. And the pandemic, so like the Olympics, my broken toe was postponed for a year.
Wow. Well, we're still not sure these Olympics are going to go off.
That's true. But I think we have enough evidence. My foot's telling me they're going to happen.
Right. Okay, well, get well soon, and I will try to do the same. And of course, I need a brace from my backside here. Wow. But anyway.
Is it that big? Hi.
I was trying to sneak in the next line before you sniped back at me, but I couldn't do it. Nice one. All right. Well, mask up and hunker down, people, even though it looks like even if we have trouble, we're going to have the Olympics rain or shine.
That's right.
This week's show, we've got a chat with Cebu reliever Reed Garrett. We're going to discuss the standings in both leagues, talk about the Corona crisis, preview interleague play, which starts Tuesday, and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so we're going to do everything high speed tonight because we've got so much we got the bases more than, there's like 5 men out there on the bases. I don't know how we got it.
Wow, which base?
Well, if there's 5 on the bases, there's between short base and between second and first base. So
you don't know that joke? That old joke about the Los Angeles Dodgers, the guy leaves, it was from Ebbets Field, and he goes into a cab and the cab driver asks him, how's the game going? So the Dodgers got 3 men on base, and the cab driver says, which base?
Yeah, I think you told me that one.
You're right. Okay.
You told me that one, but yes, 3 men on which base. Yeah. All right. So on Wednesday, thanks to the assistance of many, we were able to sit down on a Teams chat. I don't know if you've ever done that. It was not Zoom.
I haven't used Teams to chat with. It's a substandard platform. Okay.
I don't know. It sounded really good it sounded better than Zoom.
Okay. Okay.
So I wouldn't call it substandard. It was pretty good.
Okay. Well, you're a Windows guy, so you're used to less than the best.
Hashtag hi.
Oh, that Mac snobbery raises its ugly head. Okay, go ahead.
Well, if that's a head.
Anyway. That was the glute damage. I don't know.
Okay. So it was a Teams call with Reed Garrett of Cebu. He's in his second season. The reliever will explain, as you will hear in the chat, how he ended up in Tokorozawa. He's not closing games per se, but there's a bullpen by committee circumstance that's happening right now with Cebu because of the deactivation of the closer, Tatsushi Masuda, the guy I call the robot. But Reed talks about that. He talks about what he does with the catcher Tomoya Mori after games, because I noticed he had been talking to him a lot when he closed out some games and a whole lot more. So let's check him out. First, let's just try to get to know you. So what brought you to NPB? How did you end up playing with the Lions?
Man, so in 2019, I was taking the Rule 5 draft by the Detroit Tigers. I didn't pitch very well. I ended up getting DFA'd by the Tigers in May. And then got sent back to the Texas Rangers, who had originally drafted me in 2014. got sent back to the Rangers. Ended up pitching the rest of that season in AAA with Nashville. Kind of rediscovered some things and made some adjustments. And I was lucky enough that the Lions had scouted me out through the later part of that year, and were interested, and ended up contacting my agents, who contacted the Rangers, and ended up allowing me the opportunity to come over here. And yeah, it was just one of those things where all the stars aligned, and I was thankful and eager for the opportunity to get a chance to pitch over here, for sure.
Right, and then you come, and the COVID situation gets worse. And you probably heard a lot about Japanese baseball and how exciting the crowds can be before you got here. And all you've been exposed to in MPB is Corona yeah. baseball, mostly silent stadiums. It's almost like high school baseball games. What has this whole experience been like for you on the field?
Man, I can still remember. So last year, we opened up with no fans like for the first couple series, and then I can remember I pitched in a game in Chiba when it was the first night that fans were actually allowed to the stadium, and there was like 5,000 people there, and it felt like there was like 50. I like ran out of the bullpen, and I was like, man, this is, I'm like, I'm not used to this right now, this is wild. But yeah, now our fans have been doing a good job with like a speaker that allows them to play some noise, some trumpets and stuff that they had recorded, which kind of gives that atmosphere that last year, like I guess 2 years ago, it would have been like. But it's definitely different playing in front of fans that are told not to really scream and yell and cheer. It's unlike anything we've ever done before. It's crazy. The best way to put it is crazy.
It certainly is. All right. So now you guys, the Lions in particular, but all the teams, I think, are seeing a lot of injuries. And who knows the cause? We won't get into that. That's a rabbit yeah. hole we won't crawl into. But you've also had some guys who haven't performed and some guys who have been surprising in terms of their performance. But recently you had to deactivate the closer, and that impacts your role. So how was the meeting and when you guys had the decision to deactivate the closer, what was that meeting like with the other guys in the bullpen?
Obviously, it's tough. Masuda is a huge part of who we are as a team. And when the Lions succeed, or when Masuda succeeds, the Lions succeed. He's a leader. He's a true professional and goes out there and does what he's supposed to do every day. Obviously, he was dealing with some things that kind of affected his performance, and we all want him to be the best that he can be because it gives our team the best opportunity to win with him here. But I think that we, as a bullpen staff, had to decide that, like, with him being gone, we need to all do the best that we can and step up and try to fill a part of the role that he filled. And I feel like guys are pushing each other and going out there and performing. I mean, Moriwaki came back from injury at the start of the year, and he's been throwing great. Tyra is incredible. I mean, he's been incredible for the last 2 years. And everybody is doing their role and filling in and giving us the best chance to win that we have at the moment.
Now, how much, I mean, I've heard people say that it's not that much different to pitch in the eighth inning or the seventh inning than it is the ninth inning. And I always say there's an air of desperation in the ninth inning. It's just a different taste. But what is it like for you pitching in different innings?
Yeah, obviously, and no matter how much you tell yourself that it's not any different, it is. You try to tell yourself that, like, pitching in the seventh or eighth inning, you're supposed to close out the seventh or eighth inning rather than close out the ninth. But it's different when everybody has always told you that the last three outs of the game are the hardest three to get. For me, I'm trying to simplify my mind the best that I can of trying to strike one. That's the best. As soon as I toe the rubber with the first hitter in the box, I tell myself, okay, get strike one. If you get strike one, that puts you at an advantage. And the more strikes that you get compiled throughout, like throughout that inning, that gives you the best chance to succeed. So for me, I just try to simplify it and try not to think about the overall, like, oh, this is the ninth inning. You're going to get the best three at-bats of the whole game, this inning. I'm trying to say, okay, get strike one, attack the hitters, and be who you are, and the rest will take care of itself.
I guess what I'm asking, or what I'm hearing, is it's different, but the job doesn't change, but it's different.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, the whole thing is getting out, no matter where you are, if you're starter or reliever. But there is a different sort of pressure, I guess you can put it. I mean, the fans are all in there. The fans are all excited, trying to rattle the pitcher or pump up the hitters. For me, I'm just trying to limit that noise that I hear. I'm just trying to relax my mind and then go forward. Because if I get too high on adrenaline, then that's I'm not necessarily effective as I would be if I just kind of calm down and take each pitch at a time.
Gotcha. All right. So I've heard a lot of the former players droolingly praising Kaima Taira, and yeah, you mentioned him just now, and yeah, we see the velocity, but what else makes him so effective?
Yeah, so I play catch with him every day. He's my throwing partner. Obviously, the fact that you see that he's able to take the ball pretty much every opportunity that he gets, I mean, there's not really any chance for him to, or any doubt of him being ready to go any given day. I mean, obviously the best ability is availability. And he's always available. He commands his cutter and changeup so well that it makes everything else that much better. It just shows that the deception that he has, being able to kind of like split the plate in half, going changeup this way and then cutter that way, it just keeps the hitters off balance, and he's able to throw it 0-0 or 3-1. He can throw whatever pitch he wants in that situation. It's impressive, to say the least.
And he's a young guy. How much of him do you really get to see during the games? You don't actually get to see him throw.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess a good thing about being here is that we always have a TV, and we're able to watch whatever's going, like watch the game from the bullpen. So I try to lock in every time he gets a chance to pitch. I always try to see what he's doing. I mean, he's a little bit different of a pitcher than I am, but seeing him attack the hitters, there's no fear. It doesn't matter if it's the batting champ or the nine-hole guy in the lineup. It doesn't matter. He's going out there, and he knows that he's got the ability to get guys out. And it's that confidence and that ability that he shows is impressive for anybody of any, like, any part. It doesn't matter who you are as a player. Watching him pitch is impressive.
That's good. I like it when other pitchers like to say that they like to watch pitchers pitch. So that says it all.
That's right.
Now, before we go on, I noticed that you usually, when you close out a game, you say something to your catcher, Tomoya Mori, at the end of games that you finish. What is it that you're saying, if you can share that with us?
Oh, man. Well, if it's like a stressful game, I always joke around with him and just kind of laugh about either the way that we got the last out or congratulate him on working with me through the game. Other than that, I congratulate him on getting us to that point. I'm thankful for him and his hard work to get us through each game, and because he catches six games a week. I know that it's got to be exhausting for him at times not to wear eight different pitchers a week, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I know he has come a long way in terms of his catching, so that's impressive as well that he's catching so much. But I thought it was a similar thing. I've gotten very good at reading lips, but I couldn't figure it out. But I did notice that you usually say something when he comes to the mound when you finish something out. So So it's different every time, basically. That's cool.
Exactly. I guess it just all depends on how that outing went for me.
All right. So how is your team at the moment? You guys are incurring some injuries, as I mentioned before, but you've got the rookie Wakabayashi's playing really consistent baseball, and Zach is here, and Yamakawa just got back. And what's the status of the squad right now?
Yeah, we were down bad at the start of the year. It seemed like we were dropping like flies. But we're starting to get some pieces back together, and we're starting to play good baseball. I mean, obviously, if you look across the league, we all have a ton of ties. I mean, that shows you that everybody's competing and everybody's playing tough baseball. I think that obviously once guys start getting more at-bats and we get deeper into the year, everybody's going to start settling in. And you'll see some guys start to heat up. We're getting bits and pieces of it here and there, but I feel like we're getting closer to playing the best baseball we can than we were a couple weeks ago.
All right, that should do it. We appreciate your time today. Thank you so much, your candidness and your time. And
I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Reed, and thank you to the people of Cebu and the PR people of Cebu for getting this interview going. Jim, what did you take away from the interview?
Well, I have to say I loved the question about the difference between pitching in late relief and pitching in the ninth inning. I loved his answer, which is people tell you it's different. You know, you believe it's different because, well, he was essentially saying you believe it's different because people tell you it's different. You know, his tact was that people are conditioned to thinking it's really different.
Huh. That, I just had a totally different take on that.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Yeah, I heard him. What I heard him saying was, you have to get outs no matter what inning you're pitching in.
Correct.
And people have said that these are the three hardest outs to
correct.
Get. Now, he didn't say he was sold on him, sold on that or not.
No, but
he said his mindset is that he has to go out and get outs.
Correct.
It doesn't matter when he's pitching.
Correct. But but what I'm saying is that he pointed out that because there is he pointed out that common belief or that common, phrase. Of course, when he says, everybody says the last three outs are the hardest. I'm saying I've also heard, people in baseball will say anything basically just to say something. I mean, they frequently, the first out is in the inning is the hardest. And then some people say the last out in the inning is the hardest. You know, it's the Yogi Berra line. 90% of the game is mental and the other half is physical.
Right.
So it's just stuff people say, but I do believe, I absolutely believe in that there is a conditioning. And I think there is a conditioning because of the save rule. The save rule has changed the way people think about baseball. And I think that's it. The save guy can get a save in the ninth inning, so the ninth inning must be more important, because until the hold came along, the guy who pitched the eighth inning got nothing, and the guy who the guy who pitched out of the one run jam in the eighth inning, one protected a one run lead in the eighth, gets nothing, and the guy who saves a three run game in the ninth gets credit. So I think that was part of it, So I like the question. I like the question, and I think it is different, but it depends on the person. I think everybody's different. Everybody has to prepare for the game as an individual with their own demons and angels and, the things and skills and approaches. So, but I thought that was interesting for him to bring up that sort of, baseball culture thing that influences how, and he's saying, I try not to think about that, but there is that thing that people tell you the ninth inning is bigger. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Okay.
I did like the talk about, I guess, the craziness of not having crazy noisy fans. It's like saying, I've got a really loud stereo, but it's broken, and I can't stand the silence. You know, it's sort of like, you know, you expect something and you don't get it. But other than that, I really enjoyed the whole thing. I thought it was a very level headed. I had a initial response, and I thought maybe he went to the Zach Neal school of Japanese baseball wish lists, because I think Zach also said when I first asked him, how did you end up in Japan, Japanese baseball? He said, I've been trying to do it for years and finally the stars aligned. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I've heard that before.
Right.
So how about you?
Well, the first thing I thought about was his breakdown of Taita, because I thought, you know, whenever you hear a pitcher say, and a lot of times it's often a teammate they're talking about, you know, I like to watch this guy pitch, he's on my team, blah, blah, blah. But, and I did ask, and it seemed to me I did not ask a follow-up question about if there's a monitor in the bullpen, but I'm assuming there must be.
Yeah.
The way he said it, because, and I've been there and I know there are TV monitors. I'm just not sure that if you're on the mound at, what is the name? I keep calling it Sabre Dome, but it's MetLife Dome.
That's right.
If you're in the bullpen for the home team, that there are TV monitors down there. I've been there. I remember what they look like. It has been, I was there last year, actually, before they barred reporters from going to the stadium. So I was there. I saw the monitors. I'm pretty sure they're still there. But I don't know if you can actually see it when you're warming up. And even if you can, is that what you should be doing when you're warming up and trying to get ready for a game? So I don't know that he can actually see Taita throw from there. But, you know, I said, you know, what makes him so good? And he talked about the fact that here's a guy who we just know him because he throws so hard and he can really dominate the strike zone with his velocity. But he also is throwing these secondary pitches. And just to hear Reed break it down like that, I thought that was interesting, and that hopefully will be informative for some of the fans, that these guys, you know, a lot of times it looks like they're just throwing hard and getting guys out, making them look stupid with the toothpicks in their hands, and that's not the case. They're thinking out there, they're trying to execute these secondary pitches and not just firing the ball hard so they can go and sit down in the dugout.
I'll add a brief note about Taita. I was doing a research study. I didn't publish it because I was telling John earlier this week that it didn't lead anywhere really all that interesting, so I didn't publish it. But part of the research, I was looking at how players' weights changed in NPB.
Yes, I remember you sending me some numbers about that.
did I? Okay. Well, anyway, the...
Or did you have a post about it?
I posted about it. I posted about a little bit. I referenced it. But anyway, the point I'm making is at one point I looked and see who's gained the most weight since they turned pro. And two of the guys who've put on the most weight are Kaima Taira and Kona Takahashi.
Takahashi, I can understand. In fact, I can see it because he was then a young kid.
Right. Well, I'm guessing it's muscle. I mean, I guess most of this is muscle. Although Takahashi, but we've seen it with past players. The Lions are not one of the teams that have a history, and a lot of the PL teams didn't have a history of like building up their players.
Mm-hmm.
But that has changed, and I would think we saw it with Hideto Asamura, went from being a very slender, you know, shortstop to being a really powerfully built guy. So the Lions are in that Pacific League groove where they are now catching up to sort of modern baseball.
Okay.
Anyway, that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. Well, that was nice. So that was basically it. I mean, it's really strange now to do these interviews over the internet with people you have not met. Up until now, I think we've basically been talking to most guys that we have met, although you did a couple last year, right?
I did, I think.
Verhagen.
Verhagen being one of them. And Alan Bucinitz, who I'd never met, and Tyler Higgins, who I'd never met.
Okay.
And Jose Perella, who I'd never met.
That's right, yeah. So, but this was basically my first where we did video this time. So I saw him and I said, hi.
That's easier.
I did get to see you Actually, that's not my first because I did Matt Moore last year.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, Matt Moore by phone. Yeah, it's hard to keep track, people. Yes, I apologize. It's hard to keep track. This COVID thing is messing us all up.
It's easier for me. I've done like about a third as many interviews as John has, so it's easier for me. I can remember them all and count them on one hand.
Yeah, Jim Allen, get your interviews done, man. You're making me do all the work.
That's what I'm good at. Man, gotta have a skill.
I don't know if that's a skill, sitting with your feet kicked up on the couch. But anyway, I tease. Where am I? So, yeah, I got to see Reed. I told him, I said, look, I saw you briefly last season. I was talking to Corey Spangenberg in the dugout, and I think I waved at you or I said hello. But I don't think he has a clue that we met.
Okay, I'm glad you added up the part that we met, because otherwise.
Yeah. Okay. And so... You're throwing me off here. You're throwing me off. But yeah, I did get to see him, but I don't think he remembers. So I reminded him at the beginning of the interview, and that's how it went. I mean, it's just weird. It's just weird. And I had an interview today. We'll be talking. I think we'll use it next week. So I'll keep it secret until I do the promo tweet on Friday in Japan. Ooh. But another player I'm sure I haven't met, and at least we had the video going today, so that was good. So, all right, well, let's transition in seamlessly and talk about the Pacific League. And this is the time of year where I start to pay attention and what the standings are telling us. I don't like to look too early because it's really, you don't know, especially in Japan where you've got this rotational thing. Every couple of weeks you end up with the same matchups, just reverse home and away. But I like to take the Bobby Valentine approach and see the teams in various situations, big leads, big deficits, close games on the road, at home, day, night, blah, 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 and then start to see what the standings are saying. And in the prediction special for the Pacific League, in my particular segment or when I led off with it, I said that I thought there were three teams that were clear playoff teams, and then the other three were basically in the bottom half and they were going to maybe fight and contend a little bit for third place. But I saw a clear cut top three, and that's what we have at the moment before interleague play starts this week. We have the SoftBank Hawks, the Rakuten Eagles, and the Lotte Marines. So except for the order, I didn't have them in that order. I had Lotte first. I had the Hawks second, and I had the Eagles third. What did you have? Do you remember?
No idea. That was time ago. No.
That was a long time ago.
I don't worry about it. You know, I think, what do I remember? I think I picked the Dragons third and I picked the Swallows. Oh, we're talking about the Pacific League, aren't we?
Yeah. You don't even remember what I said. That was a long time ago too, apparently.
I was thinking about some of the things you said, but not the order specifically.
Okay.
Like you said, there's a clear top and bottom to the league, and I don't see that. I see the league's pretty much even. There's a pretty normal distribution, and all the teams are pretty close.
Well,
I mean, in terms of wins and losses, I mean, you look at the quality. I mean, you look at the fact that the Fighters have scored 134 runs and allowed 190, which is close to the most in the league. And, you know, that's really bad. But the difference between the top three teams is pretty much nothing.
Sure. But my point being that, for instance, the Fighters have never been at the top of the standings. The Buffaloes have never been at the top of the standings.
No, because they started off poorly. Yes, that's correct.
And they're not at the top of the standings now.
Okay.
And the Lions, while they were near the top of the standings, they fell fairly quickly, and they've been in the bottom half pretty much the whole time. So not that I been paying that much attention.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing that gets me, is because you don't pay attention to the standings, but you have a pretty good sense of what they are, which is better than me. I used to have a good sense when I input them into a database on a daily basis, but I don't.
Right.
So I don't really pay attention.
Right. And so in that respect, yeah, if you look at the game difference and all that stuff, no, there's not a lot of separation. But if you realize that some of these teams have not been up at the top then that's why I get a sense that there is some separation. Okay. So maybe that's because I am looking not per se to see where teams are per se, but I just noticed that the order has been pretty much the top three have been in the top three and the bottom three have been in the bottom three for the most part. That's what I'm talking about. So any surprise? I mean, I'm looking at the Hawks and I'm seeing some injuries, maybe some underwhelming performances from some players. And yet here we are, they're at the top of the standings. They're missing closer Yui Tomori. He's out injured. They're about to lose Levon Moinello to the Olympic team for the Cuban Olympic team. So he'll be gone for a while, but I still fully expect them to find somebody else and have them ready to go and somehow hold on to first place while they're playing against these poor little hapless Central League teams where they can just pat their win total probably, even though they don't have their full squad. So that just seems very impressive to me with
I think
they've been able to do with
the non-surprise for the Hawks is that they're not as good as they were, which really that was not the surprise to me because they're old. I mean, this is an old team. I mean, their pitching staff is not that old.
Mm-hmm.
It's closer to middle of the road kind of old.
Okay.
But the hitters are, yeah, definitely easily the oldest team in NPB.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you mean. Even the guys coming off the bench are all veteran guys. The pinch hitters, a lot of them are experienced guys. Yeah, I see that.
I mean, just the average age of their offense is 30.6 years per plate appearance.
Per plate appearance, you got it down to.
Well, awesome. It's weighted. Okay. And that's over a year older than the next oldest team.
And what's that team?
Chunichi Dragons. Your Chunichi Dragons.
Oh, no. Yes and no and yes.
Yes. No. Sorry. Sorry to bring that up.
It's okay. They won today. They won on Sunday. Did. So I was thinking, well, when we talk about when we get to the Central League, but I thought you better win while you're still playing a Central League team at home because you won't see very many wins against the Pacific League if this is the way you're going to play.
Okay.
But, yeah. And then the Rakuten Eagles, I'm not surprised. I kind of was surprised that they spent so many days at the top and that they had gotten off to this good start, considering Takayuki Kishi really hasn't pitched all that well for them. And those talked about the top three in the guys we thought would be in the top three in their rotation, and that's Masahiro Tanaka, the aforementioned Kishi, and the ace B Takahiro Norimoto. And then they had the rookie Takahisa Hayakawa, who came in and we loved him in the preseason, and he's, what is he, leading the Pacific League in wins at the moment?
Leading both leagues in wins with six.
Yeah, so someone on Pro Yaku News joked that, you know, those guys could, I forgot the total. I thought it was 30 or something, some crazy number that they could put the team 30 over 500 by themselves. Just Tanaka and Hayakawa just joining the
That wasn't the staff. This past week, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
this
I gathered,
past week.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, good, smart. But I would say with the Eagles, the offense has been a little bit better than I expected, and the rotation maybe a little less than I expected. How do you see them?
I think the rotation is about where I expected it, maybe slightly on the low end.
Okay.
Hayakawa started well. He's going through some adjust. You know, people are getting used to what he's throwing. But he's got good stuff. So he's going to adjust back, and that's fine. And Waku, he's been up and down. He's still got some of those really good pitches he showed last year. And that sinker he's throwing this year is really good. Kishi had a good outing his last time, which was, you know, he had a run of three or four games where he was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Tanaka is an interesting case because he pitched Saturday and he's become crafty. You know, he's sort of like he's playing a game with the hitters. You know, today they'll probably be looking for my fastball, so I won't throw it. And I think he threw like 40% of his pitches the other day were sliders, which has been his best, his most consistent pitch this year. So, yeah. Okay, pitched pretty well in the sense that he held Japan's best offense to a run in seven innings.
That's against the Marines. Yeah.
Yep. But he also, had it not been for three good plays from his fielders, it could have been three runs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, the Marines had a good plan against him, which they do sometimes. We saw that last year. Sometimes the Marines have a really good solution, and they beat up on people before the other team can react to it. And on Saturday they decided, okay, we're going to look for the splitter, and he threw a lot of splitters, and when he missed them, they nailed them.
Okay. Well, we will talk about Masahiro.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So, he's good, but people are really preparing well for him. So he's having, I think everyone's up for Tanaka. So that's been hard on him. If he didn't have the big name, I think he'd probably have a better record.
Yeah. It's possible. I don't know about the record being so much better, but he might, I don't know.
I think people have prepared better for him, more for him. I think everybody wants to do well against him.
That's true. That's something that's certain. And then there's the Lions and Zach Neal and Reed Garrett and the rest of the guys, Corey Spangenberg and the Japanese players leading the way. And I just can't say enough about Gakuto Wakabayashi. Mm-hmm. I'm just so impressed with him. And I just remember one other, I mean, he's older, Wakabayashi is, than Hayato Sakamoto, but he reminds me of Hayato Sakamoto in that he just doesn't seem overwhelmed in any situation. He can come up and start a game off against Noki Sasaki and hit the first pitch up the middle for a base hit, or he can come up in the ninth inning with two outs and the team down by a couple runs and have a couple runners on base and get a hit. Or it just seems like he just makes good contact. And he's hard to strike out. He's hard to keep off the bases. He's leading Japan, I believe, in stolen bases with at least 20. I know he got 20 yesterday. I had my hands full of sumo today, so I didn't really see if he got a steal today, even though I had the game on. But I'm just so impressed with this guy. And to think every team had, what, four opportunities at least to try to draft him, and they didn't, and he fell down to the Cebu Lions, who took him, and then he's in the starting lineup, and he's a huge contributor to them. You know, they're not in third place, but if they make the playoffs, I'm just ready to hand him a MVP vote right now, because I don't think they could have done it, you know, or they could be where they are right now without him, obviously. And if they do make the playoffs, I don't care about home runs and RBIs and all those other things, because he's stealing bases, he's scoring runs, and he's getting big hits for this team. It's just, and he's playing pretty good defense. Sometimes I've seen him not make some plays, but as long as you're contributing on the offensive side, I think you're going to get the opportunity to get better at the defensive side. So I'll expect him to improve as he goes along through the season. But what have you seen with the Lions?
Oh, well, it's young guys. I mean, they didn't have Corey Spangenberg for a while. They didn't have Zach Neal for a while. They didn't have their new fellow, Matt Dermody. Yeah, and I've liked him a little bit. He doesn't throw really hard, but I liked him. So, you know, they missed a lot of pieces at the start, and the young guys really filled in. Not only the young guys, but, you know, guys like Wu Nenting, who I have mentioned, and Sosuke Genda has been really building up steam. They also lost Takumi Kuriyama and Hotaka Yamakawa for basically all of April.
Right.
So those are big things they were missing. I mean, they were really running on fumes. And the pitching was holding them together. I mean, okay, they're still the Lions, and you know they're not going to have the best pitching in the world, but. Mm-hmm. It has been impressive, and some of the guys who've been real, you know, guys like Wataru Matsumoto and Keisuke Honda isn't even pitching. Tatsuya Imai and Wataru Matsumoto have had so much trouble with walks in their career. They still have those games where they're troubled, but they've been having more games where they're in command. And when those guys are in command, they're really deadly. So they're not consistently good, but they're consistently dangerous.
And yeah, I mean, Kona Takahashi, I think when Zach Neale was on the show last year, he pointed to him, Takahashi as the ace, and he really has taken the lead in that respect and really come along. And Matsumoto is the guy when I saw him early on, I said, well, that guy has ace stuff, not really Imai, not to me, but their results have been what and what, but Matsumoto really threw well the other day in a victory, and Imai pitched okay the other day. He went 7 innings, but he ended up allowing 5 runs, and it was okay. I mean, I've seen better, I've seen worse from him, but Matsumoto is the guy I've liked, and I think I can see. I mean, this team is so hard. I mean, they don't obviously have the offensive punch that we are used to seeing this team have the past 2-3 seasons. That's not there right now.
Without shoot to Tomosaki, that really hurts.
Yeah, it's not there right now. But you know, their ability to generate runs and steal bases and take extra bases and get hits and find gaps, and I mean, they're scoring enough. So if they pitch, if they improve the pitching side, I can definitely see them climbing in the standings and being. So I just think that fight for third place is going to be really, really, really fun to watch. But I think the top 3 teams, to me, in my head, at least, they're kind of settled. So
I think the Lions are going to do really well, because I've learned on Pro Yaku News that the more you sacrifice, the more you really want to win.
Oh, stop it. when are you going to sacrifice so you can win?
No, it doesn't matter. You make contact, you make the bunt, you do it right, you do it wrong. If you're sacrificing, that shows you've got the right attitude. That's important.
All right, well, we've got some
The Lions have the right attitude.
Okay. Well, that's more I can say for you, buddy.
give him a pen right now.
All right. Settle down. We have some high heat about Pro Yaku News if we can get to it. So let's transition then. Let's make a two-team transition and talk about the Central League now. Yes, obviously the Tigers, to me, they're at the top. They've got a 4-game lead over the Giants. They look like a well-rounded, very balanced team. Yep. We can see the talent. We can see the pitching. But I think what we're also seeing is a little bit of determination and a little bit of grit. And I know you can't quantify that, so you don't want to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it.
I think you can talk about it, but I think you have to be careful in making too big a deal about things that you can't really measure. But yeah, there.
That's you. I like to talk about these things.
I know. You're
measured.
You can be one of those people who talks about stuff that they're not really very clear objectively about. That's fine.
No, that's not fair. I can be objective.
You can
about
be,
it,
but you don't mind if you're not.
I just don't have. What's that?
You don't mind if you're not, if it's just subjective.
I don't know. You tell me when I go off the rails. Then I'm just seeing a team that, because in the past we've seen the defense not be great at times, and we're seeing that with this team as well this year. We're seeing some missed plays, some outs that could have been outs. But what I'm also seeing is in these close games, even if they have that mistake and they allow a run or they allow extra runners, they either get out of the situation or they make up for it on the offensive side and they come out with the wins. Now, yes, that's results based, and
I don't have a problem with that. No, go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't like to say, well, that team's good because it won. Well, you know,
there's
other teams that are good that don't win. And like I've always told people, sometimes you see improvement in a team, it doesn't always show up in the win-loss column, but
correct.
You see improvement, and I'm seeing the improvement there.
Yeah,
they're not always on top in the score at the end of the game, but they're just competing so much better. The mistakes, you know, they're able to make up for the mistakes, and mistakes are going to happen. I just love what I'm seeing from this team. And we also saw the Tigers get a boost when second year rookie. And I always like saying that phrase because the guy didn't play on the top team last year, so he's still considered a rookie. And that was Junya Nishi, a right hander. He made his debut on Wednesday at Koshien and fired 5 no-hit innings, and they took him out. Now, he had 4 walks, and he struck out 1, but I know he had made a lot of pitches. I think it was 107. I'll look it up as we speak here. But they took him out. He ends up getting the win anyway because, you know, they were playing Yakult, and Yakult just couldn't generate any offense that day. So that was that. He made 87 pitches. And they took him out, and I was kind of surprised, but oh well. The bullpen hung on. They won the game 3-1 over the Swallows, and he was their first pick in the 2019 draft. So
he wasn't their first pick. Their first pick was Yasunobu Ogawa.
Well, he was their first actual pick. How's that?
He was their first signing. How's that? First.
Well, they. He didn't get to pick him.
Well, he did pick him, though. I mean, see, I think you have to. I want to change that because when you say it's their first pick, it sounds like the first guy they wanted, and that's just the way it works in Japan. So he was their first round signing, I guess.
I don't know. Does it sound like the first guy they wanted? I would have said first choice, then that sounds like the first guy they wanted.
First choice.
He was the first guy they got.
Then they didn't pick him. They picked Okagawa.
Okay, well, he was the player.
He was the first round signing.
He was their first round signing.
They got him in the first round.
Any better.
I think it's a lot better, but that's okay. That's only me.
But anyway, where was I? How we're talking often about do we get off track here? It's amazing.
It's amazing.
So yeah, the pitching, if he comes in and pitches well, he looked fairly good. I don't know that there's actually room in the rotation for him. Just like we saw Noki Sasaki for the Marines come up and throw fairly well. I don't know, fairly well. He threw okay. And then they sent, you know, they deactivated him. That was the plan. They were going to give him the 1 start and send him down to the farm team. But for Nishi, I don't know that he has room in that rotation. I would like to see again, though, see him again and against the Giants and the Bay Stars, teams that have a little bit better offense.
Well, the Swallows offense is actually not bad right now, so I don't think that's an issue.
I didn't say it was bad. I said a little bit better offense.
The Bay Stars?
I mean, they have a lineup that has some pop. You just can't make mistakes, a lot of mistakes with them. I think you can get away with some mistakes against the Swallows because they're not going to hit them out.
Meh. I think that was before. I think that those days are over right now. So anyway, yeah, I don't think he's going to, again, it's, you know, he's a young kid and they're going to let him go through the the cycle of going up and down and evaluating and making adjustments. But yeah, he looked good. One thing I liked from him, and I've watched him since he was in high school. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that I watched guys in high school, but I remember I paid a lot of attention to him and Roki Sasaki. And he had one of those deliveries where every time he threw, his forearm slammed into his chest very violently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And they've just adjusted that to where it doesn't. And that looked really clean. I thought the quality of his pitches was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And of course, my money was on him hitting the first home run in that game. It wasn't. He used to, because when he wasn't pitching for the Japan National Under 18 team, he was the DH.
Oh, okay.
So, but
can't wait to see him with the bat.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, you would, but the Tigers basically, okay, I know this is going to annoy some Tigers fans, as I've done, but basically the Tigers coach is without sort of like asking, well, let's see, can we actually use this guy as a two-way player? They said, no, two-way players don't work in the Central League. Let's just nip that in the bud before he gets the wrong idea.
Yikes.
But this guy's got real power. I mean, this guy has got real power. but nah, let's just not do it. So that's, I mean, it's not a long shot, but as now I will be fair. If they basically tried him out and they, you know, they worked him out as a hitter,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't report on it, you know, and they did it in private and then made a decision about it, then I apologize. But if they just said, no, hitters don't, you know, you're not Shohei Ohtani, we're not in the Pacific League, so forget it, then that's, you know, that's basically making decisions based on things that people tell you are true, but that you don't know.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, let it try it. But anyway, they're not going to. So because they're not going to. But having said that, yeah, I certainly agree with you. I certainly agree with you about the Tigers. They do everything right. Their defense is not a lot better, although I think Takumi Nakano, the sixth round draft choice, is a big improvement on defense at short. Well, he's a steady improvement on defense at short.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing with the Tigers this year is this is really and I've said this before, this is Akihiro Yano's team. And he's the guy who's going to say, you know, you make mistakes, it's part of the game. I'm not going to make a capital offense about it. I'm not going to roast you in the media.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you make a mistake in the game, you get over it, you keep going. And that's the way this team has played. The Tigers of old, you know, the Tigers of the last couple of years have been, oh, you know, we've shot ourselves in the foot and we're going to do it again. I get the feeling that they're just focused on, you know, making the next play and not worrying about the last one more than they used to. So I like that. But all around, this is a team. They pitch well. They hit well. They've easily the best offense in the Central League. Pitching is excellent. The fielding's pretty good. You know, Koji Chikamoto is such a explosive player in some ways. But, I mean, he and Yutaro Umeno are favorites of mine because of their base running. I mean, they do make a few mistakes, but they also are very heads up. They also take advantage of when teams aren't really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And they you know, they'll win a couple of games like that every year doing it. So there's so much to like about the Tigers. So I'm pretty excited about them.
Yep. And like I said before, I really wanted to choose them as the Central League champion, but I just felt like something was going to hold them back. So
yeah.
I'll keep watching. I'm you know, I would rather be wrong and see them win, because there's just so many Tigers fans out there. I know they're a hugely popular team, and I would want to support those Tigers fans, because it's been 2005 when I started at the English version of the Yomiuri Shimbun was the last time that they won the Central League pennant. So I'd like to see them do it again. Other teams, I'm really proud that I saw something in the Yakult Swallows that said I don't think this is a cellar dweller team this year. I'm really happy that they're doing well. I think it's sustainable with the offense that they're getting, but they occasionally get a really good pitching just to start on the mound. And in particular, the past two from Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa, who has done a Greg Maddux almost 2 weeks in a row.
He had an eight-ninths of a Maddux. He threw 100 pitches in 8 innings.
Okay. So that was yesterday, right? The Saturday when
that's
the
correct.
Swallows beat the Bay Stars. Yeah. And he shut out the Dragons the previous week. So I'm really happy for them. I like the way they look in terms of contending for that third spot. They're in third right now. We've got the Tigers in first and the Giants in second place. And the Giants, you know, that's a team with a noticeable limp in that. We saw what happened to Eric Thames, and we've seen other injuries in Tomoyuki Sugano. Their ace is out for a while. He has been gone. They've just been
Hayato Sakamoto, broken hand.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned the fact that you thought that some of the teams were going to bust out those mitts that they have in the major leagues, and doggone it. Yes, we didn't get to mention it on the show last week, but 2 weeks ago you mentioned it, and the Giants were putting mitts on most of their players when they were running the bases.
I was right.
Yes, you were right.
I shouldn't have given Tatsunori Hara my Amazon Prime account. That'll cost me.
Mitts for everyone. You get a mitt. But anyway, that team still finds a way to win games. And although Takayuki Kajitani, the often injured outfielder, left the game today with some discomfort in his left thigh, so maybe they're going to have to put in another young player outfield. But they just find guys, and they stick them out there and they produce. So I'm not surprised, and I think if they get healthy in the second half, they still can provide a challenge to the Tigers. I'm not sure the Swallows are going to get much better in winning consistently unless they win a whole bunch of close games. So that's going to take better pitching, and especially from the bullpen. The other teams, the Dragons, I can see it in there. The Dragons, they're competing. They have the best ERA in Japan the last time I looked. I'm not looking at it right now, but I'll look it up as we talk. If they could just get some hits here and there, they don't even need that many more. They're getting guys on base. They're getting walks. They just don't have any pop. They don't seem to be getting a lot of extra bases of any kind, extra base hits of any kind. But they can just get a few hits here and there. Their pitching staff is doing a bang up job to keep them in the relevant at all. I mean, the way they don't score runs is 3.11 is their ERA for their starters, and it's 2.39 for the relievers, and the 2.88 team ERA is the best in Japan.
So what I want to say is the Dragons are funny because they're like the flip side of the golden age of the Dragons from 2004 to 2012 or so.
Mm-hmm. In that
those teams were really good offensive teams and really good defensive teams. Okay, these Dragons are okay. They're okay defensively. They're not bad, but their offense is pretty bad. But their pitching is really good. You know, in those years, everybody said, "Oh, the Dragons have these incredible pitchers." But what they were really seeing was Nagoya Dome and the defense.
Hmm.
And then when they got on the road, they played all these slugfests because they were a really good offensive team that didn't score runs because they played in Nagoya Dome. Well, now they're not really a good offensive team and they don't score runs because they play in Nagoya Dome, but the pitching and something, definitely something has changed with that pitching staff in the terms of the approaches that the pitchers have taken, finding similar ways. I've seen this with Yuya Yanagita, mm-hmm. and watching him sort of imitate Yudai Ono on the right side, you know, a similar kind of approach, try to keep everything more or less in the strike zone and, but better, you know, better control, maybe less variety in his pitches, but more consistent. So I've liked that. And we also saw Takumi Yamamoto came up today, which is, I think, the first for him. So it's like
tiny tosser.
Wow. So anyway, well,
that's what I nicknamed him.
Yeah. But I have enjoyed, I do love watching the Dragons pitch. I'll tell you, that's been fun for me this year.
Okay. All right. Let's make one of those one seam transitions and talk about interleague play. It's otherwise known as the annual Pacific wind padding session. And it begins on Tuesday after skipping over the pandemic hit 2020 season last year. Now, obviously the Pacific League commonly dominates the Central League in this matchup. Only one time has the Central managed more overall wins. That was in 2009. When it went 70-67-7, and then 2010 was the largest win discrepancy for the Pacific League. The Pacific League went 81-59 with four ties, so 22 was the differential there. There's a lot of numbers. I'm expecting more of the same overall, but I'm hoping the Hanshin Tigers can maybe put an end to this thing, because we've only seen the Central League team that has won, or Central League teams that have won the interleague session, have been the Giants and the Yakult Swallows. And that's it. That's it. And the Giants did it twice. So maybe I'm hoping that the Hanshin Tigers can break through and make the Central League proud. The overall total is, and I saw this on NHK because I had a different figure from another site. The all-time record is the PL dominates. It has 1,098 wins to 966 losses. There have been 60 ties. Now, on another site, I saw that the Pacific League had 1,102 wins, so four more. But I'm going to trust NHK. I saw that on NHK as well, and Jim has the same figure. So, obviously, poor teams like the Dragons and maybe the Bay Stars who have consistently through the years, and the Carp, they've been another team that just doesn't do well, or they haven't done well in interleague play against Pacific League. We just, may God have mercy on their poor souls, but the Tigers and the Giants I expect to do well, and I'm interested to see how the Swallows do, and of course I want to see how Oryx does, because Oryx always jumps up and always makes a run against the Pacific League and gets back into things. And the Fighters, they've been playing good ball recently, so it should be fun. But yeah, the Bay Stars have been full-on whipping boys. I think they've finished last in interleague play five times. And this is since 2005 we've been having interleague play. So what are you expecting, or what are you hoping to see? Or are you just going to sit back and just watch the interesting matchups that we get when we have interleague?
Well, that is, it's always fun. There's so many things to say about interleague play. Obviously, this year is the most anticipated interleague session, really, since 2005, I think.
Because?
Oh, because clearly, because until 2020, we had this dialogue about how come the Pacific League is better in interleague? That was the question every year. Why is the Pacific League better in interleague? And that's changed. Well, what happened was the Yomiuri Giants losing eight straight Japan Series games in 2 years. The SoftBank Hawks. Because now people are going, not how come the Pacific League is better in interleague, but how come the Pacific League is better, period. So that whole discussion has changed. And so this winter, and I just, for some unknown reason, I came across all these discussions on YouTube this past week with different people talking about what the Central needs to do. And these were all from like January. I don't know why they popped up on my feed this week. But it was really interesting. And I think I'll just go a couple of points people brought up. And first, I'll start with the raw data from 2005 to 2009. The Pacific League had a 505 winning percentage.
505, okay.
They were playing more games because they started out with three home and three away against every team.
Correct.
From 2010 to 2014, which included that 1 year when they had the largest gap, of course, they were still playing more games, was 547 winning percentage for the Pacific League.
So from 505 to 547?
That's correct. And since 2015, it's been 554. So the record since 2015 has been 294 to 236. Now, the best thing, so I just want to touch on a couple of points that were brought up on a couple of different YouTube programs. One was by Masaru Yamamoto. And the other was by three guys, Shinya Miyamoto. There were three PL Gakuen guys, okay? Atsushi Kataoka and his former PL teammate, Kazuyoshi Tatsunami. Anyway, the point was, they basically all decided that the way to fix the Central League one thing was to get a DH. And the reason, one of the interesting reasons, most of them were kind of weird. I mean, they were kind of spurious, but one of the really good things is, and I think you've brought this up, that having a DH gives you an extra, gives a position player an extra 400 at bats a year on the first team. That's not going to pitchers.
I've never said that it's not going to pitchers. I just said it brings that role to the team instead of what you've pointed out, I don't know if we're pointing at each other's points, but that we've made through the years, but I've always said that they don't have that person on the roster.
Right. Well, that's another thing.
And you've said that they've used the position to add another aspect to the team, put a faster guy in the field or something like that.
Yeah, that's been common because they often don't have the Central League teams don't have guys who are basically, you know, they're not really able to keep a guy around who can't play defense. So they tend not to have those guys that can get jobs in the Pacific League. So there's that. But there's also I thought that was a good one. You know, if you've got jobs for 9 hitters in a game, that's 11% more development time on the first team, more adjustment time on the first team that Central League teams don't get, in addition to the pitchers, helping the pitchers out. So I thought that was quite interesting. And now the solution that these guys brought up was, the most interesting one was, if we don't have all DH in the Central League, how about all DH in the Interleague in all the home and road parks? So that was one idea, which I thought was interesting. And the other, and that was to give the PL players, the Central League players, more become more accustomed to being DHs. And the other one was so ironic. I love these points because in 2005, and we heard the Central League team's managers like Hiromitsu Ochiai, I said, Who needs interleague? Nobody wants to see interleague. It's a distraction. We don't have to care about it. Nobody cares. We can ignore it. I mean, he basically told his players, you know, forget about it. The Dragons went into the tank in interleague. It was amazing. So that year. So there was that whole attitude in the Central League. The interleague's a Pacific League thing. We don't need it. And these three of these four guys I'm talking about were Central League guys, and they said, we should play more interleague games. And the reason they want to play 3 at home and 3 away is to give the Central League hitters more familiarity with the better Pacific League pitchers.
Yeah. Yep.
So I thought those were all interesting. And I also think that after a winter of talking, of actually changing the dialogue from what is it about interleague that gives the Pacific League some kind of special advantage to, oh, they have a special advantage because they're actually better than us.
Yeah.
So yeah. After that dialogue, I want to see if the teams have made any adjustments to that.
Interesting. Yeah, it has become, it seemed to be not just this past year, this past offseason, but the offseason before as well. Everyone had an opinion about why the Pacific League was better. And everyone, you know, we were talking about the fact that they supposedly threw harder, and someone looked that up and it really wasn't the case. And they had better players, and we weren't able to really quantify that. And there's more speed. That there probably is more speed some teams. I don't know about all throughout the lineup of every team. But anyway, we got to move along here. We will enjoy Interleague, and we'll talk about it more next week after the first week of games. But it should be fun. I'm really, like I said, looking forward to seeing what the Tigers can do and how some of the lower tier Pacific League, and by tier, I just mean they're in the bottom half of the standings. They're not necessarily second class citizens of the Pacific League, but at the moment they're maybe they can make a push by stepping on some of these Central League teams. But anyway, let's get to As the Pitch Turns with Masahiro Tanaka. He threw on Saturday 7 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 2 walks, no hit batters. He didn't hit any shoelaces again, but he got a no decision against the Marines, who ended up winning the game 3-1 on a pair of home runs that came as soon as Makun left the mound. So he threw well. You talked about it. You broke that down already. I don't think we need to go through that again. But I just wanted to make one point, because after watching him pitch, I think he has made 6 starts now. Seems like he's working his way through the newness of the league. And like you mentioned earlier, well, this particular pitch is not working today. Let's throw it out. Let's scrap it. Let's just use this, that, and the other. And I forgot exactly how you worded it, but to me, it just seemed like he's just working his way through things. He's trying to discover what he is right now, what the league is, And I think in the second half of the season, or maybe even after Interleague, we're going to just see somebody similar to that dominant guy of 2013. But he hasn't been that guy yet, and he's still, you know, he's been really good. I mean, he could have a better record than he has right now. I think he's still 2-3 since he got the no decision. But I get the sense he's going to improve as the season goes along, as long as he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, well, he's been outpitched a couple of times, so that hasn't, you know, now Yukusawa beat him twice, I think. And one of the times he really pitched quite a bit better, and Manabu Mima was really, really good. I mean, he was just missing barrels. They basically didn't make any good contact against it, with exception of one ball. They didn't make good contact off him at all. So, yeah, he is working. He's got so much in his arsenal, and I absolutely think he's going around. He's seeing what works. We saw this with the Yankees. We don't remember it so much with – I think he was doing it with Rockton before he went to the Yankees, but we didn't notice it because he was so overpowering. You know, he was
right.
He was sort of like, shall I use the Lamborghini or the Ferrari today? You know, so now he's got a – now he's working with a Volvo and a Toyota, so – but he's still got, you know, he's down in every man's category now a little bit. His velocity is not what it used to be. And so he's tried to be his old self. That's not it, but he can fool the heck out of people, but he's still working on it. And I think none of the bat. And as I said to John before the start of the show, I think all the hitters have been watching him. You know, people watch Tanaka. I watched him a lot. I watched him more with the Yankees than I did with the Eagles. You know, so yeah. I'm more familiar with his development as a pitcher with the Eagles. It was much more interesting. And what I'm seeing there is what I'm seeing here, which is he's always going through these iterations of, you know, what's next? What's the next step? What's the, you know, every game is like a science experiment for him. So I love it. Every game is sort of a little new Rubik's cube. Let's figure out what he's trying to do and what the hitters are trying to do. So I'm digging it.
As the pitch turns. All right. Making a four-seam transition. On Tuesday, the Hiroshima Carp had to send out first team guys, including star Seiya Suzuki, second baseman Ryosuke Kikuchi, and shortstop Kaito Kozono. They're starting combination up the middle. Some other players, and then there was another cluster of guys who had to be sent out. And then today we got word that Alan Cudi, their starting pitcher who's leading the way in victories on the team, had to be sent down because he tested positive, or I'm sorry, taken off the roster because he tested positive for coronavirus. So big cluster there. And then I had a senior moment, I guess I'll call it, is because I remembered there was another cluster with Nippon Ham. In my mind, it was the finale of one series and a couple games in the next series, but it turns out it was an entire series got wiped out. So I was thinking that this was going to be the first series that was wiped out that had to be postponed. Jason Koskri and our friend Deanna Rubin on Twitter reminded me, so I just kind of crawled in a hole and said, sorry, guys, I forgot. And she's like, Deanna was saying, it was only 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, well, it was 3 weeks, but I'm not going to say anything. You know, I should remember that those games got canceled because of COVID. But hopefully it's a tribute to how busy I am, too, so that I couldn't remember.
You're in demand.
Jim is not the only busy person. If you talk to Jim, Jim sounds like the only busy person, but he is not the only busy person.
I am.
Don't
listen to him.
But you don't have time to listen to him. Exactly. I don't.
That's not true. I'm listening carefully. Otherwise, who would I have to criticize?
Exactly. So we'll see how that plays out for the Carp. I'm assuming the games for Interleague are going to be on, and they're just going to have to make do with some farm hands. They've got some players, though, they can use, and some guys with some top team experience who have just not panned out for some reason or other, and some guys who've had, you know, they brought in from other teams in the past couple of years who really haven't done anything on the top team, but they can give them a shot. At least they're competent and credible performers on the team, and not just, you know, guys who have never done anything in this league. So we'll see how that plays out. So a couple of notes. One, Zelus Wheeler saw his hitting streak snapped at 22 games on Wednesday. And wow, I was just so impressed with that. I was, you know, watching. It turned into almost must-see TV. You got to see if Zelis is going to get a hit. So I was trying to tune in when he was batting, and it was fun. Unfortunately, it got snapped, but he started another one right away the next day. So he's back on track with more hits. He's really, I mean, if I were Zelis and they went out and got Justin Smoke and Eric Thames, I would have been working really hard to show them that they didn't need these guys. And it just seems like that's what he did in the offseason, and the hard work is paying off.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been great, so no problem. Certainly, he wasn't playing when he was suddenly out of the lineup after playing really well for a while. Of course, he also had he was also deactivated for coronavirus, so that didn't help. But right. Yeah, no, he's just been great. So,
batting .391, so in 100 and almost 15 at bats, so. Really fun to watch him. He's so entertaining. And his last full season with the Eagles, I was at Cebu Dome, MetLife Dome, whatever. And I was walking through the back. You know where the smoking room is, Jim.
I do know.
I was walking through, and then there's the trainer's room is next, essentially next to the smoker's room, the smoking room in the corner behind the mirror room. All these rooms that we're in the maze here. But and I saw him getting some pregame treatment, and I'm thinking, wow, does he go through all that every game? And I was thinking, man, you know, it's so much work to get ready to play. And it just looks like he's just rejuvenated with the Giants. And he doesn't make every play out there in the outfield, but you really get the sense that you're not going to drop a ball in front of him that easily, and you're not going to hit one over his head that easily. And if you hit one toward the wall, he's going to try to toward the wall and foul territory. He's going to try have a good chance to run that down too, even though, you know, he doesn't look like the most gifted athlete. He's very athletic, and I think he's proven it in the way that he's producing for that team. And I think they're not missing an Eric Thames. I mean, I want to say they are, but they might be missing the home runs. But everything else, I think Z, I call him Z Wheelies. I think Z is doing everything else as well as a guy who used to play in the major leagues could do.
Yeah, I mean, no problem. He's adjusting. He's just really made a home here. So, yeah.
Okay. And the other note, unfortunately, I want to call him Cluster Boy, but I don't think that's very fair. You said I was mean with words earlier, so I'm not going to say that.
You'll find a new one. That's okay.
I think I already said it. Okay. But Ikuhiro Kiyota of the Lotte Marines saw his contract with the team terminated, and he had already been suspended indefinitely because he was found to be the and I don't remember when this was, but he was suspended earlier this year or late last year.
The end of last season
because he was found to have been the cause of the cluster breakout with the Marines that caused them to have to send down or deactivate a number of players and bring up a number of young players. But you know, it was a positive thing for the Marines because they discovered a couple players and got some guys some experience. But that was a problem with the team. They had suspended him, and then today we learned that his contract had been
– Well, they activated him. They reinstated him on May 1st.
Okay.
And then on May 21st, there was another article in another, I don't know if the same weekly magazine or another, that the one that exposed him for having it. He's married and he was out dining in Sapporo with a woman who wasn't his marriage partner. And I don't think it said that he was cheating on his wife. He was eating out, you know, when he wasn't supposed to be eating out. But this time, apparently, the story was a little deeper and it basically reported on his infidelity. And the Marine said, come on, guy, basically. And my friend, Mr. Noriaki Kajiwara said, basically, we have to apologize to the fans for this betrayal.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, so he's gone.
He's gone.
And he's 35. I saw in the article. I didn't know that he was that old. So because I was thinking he could hit a little bit, and he really tore the Dragons up in the 2010 Japan Series. So I thought, you know, left field has been a problem for them. They're there. Stick him out there. But I don't think it's that easy or cut and dry. And I'm not sure that he produced, but I don't know. They're not getting very much production from left field, so they might as well try. I don't know. But anyway, that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. I hope he does get a job and another chance. So, and we'll have another chance next week to get to the high heat. We won't be able to do it this week, but anyone else who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat, or leave us a question or comment on the Facebook page. Also, you can send us MP3s. Just tape your voice and send us a voice memo that way, and send that via email. Jim, you got anything coming up?
I do not, but if you are interested and you want to get a weekly newsletter from jballallen.com, please subscribe, and I will send you one every Monday morning.
All right. Interleague. I love it. It should be fun. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.